We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. This podcast is brought to you by a generous grant from Chaos. Is the worst possible person in charge of a world power? Have your political parties begin breaking up and getting back together more than the tide and the beach? Is capitalism still a thing? Chaos. You must imagine Sisyphus happy. But as thankful as we are for our generous sponsors, Chaos, this is really, honestly, only possible because of the generous support of loyal viewers like you who continue to make this all possible over at patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff. Do keep up the support of the bullshit arts. Keep them independent. It's important that the bullshit arts are, as always, independent. But as much as we appreciate you, as much as we appreciate Chaos, our major sponsor for today's episode is, of course, you know it, I know it, the Lunar New Year. Yes, it is the year of the horse this year. All horses are horse, of course, and no one's on fire like a horse, of course. That is, of course, unless the horse is the 2026 Lunar New Year animal, the fire horse. Yes, it is the year of the fire horse. It's perfect for bold decisions, dramatic exits, and investing in something that you absolutely do not understand. Experts say fire horse years bring intensity, transformation, and occasionally burning the stable down just to feel something again. Feeling impulsive? Blame the horse. Changed careers overnight? Blame the horse. Accidentally started a small revolution at family dinner? That's fire horse energy, baby. This Lunar New Year, honor tradition. Clean your house. Set intentions. Eat well. Give red envelopes and try not to trample your enemies in a blaze of righteous destiny. The Lunar New Year. Because star signs aren't just for white women. And of course, none of this would be possible nor necessary if I wasn't doing my live shows. So please, please, guys, if you have a chance, if you're in any of these areas, come out and see me doing my stand-up and storytelling show, Jokes, about the time that I got detained in America, and other stories. So far, I'll be at the Adelaide Fringe from March 10th to 15th at Gluttony. The tickets have started selling for that, so if you want to get in, grab those. We're at 6 p.m. at the Piglet in Gluttony. I will be trying to get to the Mount Gambier Fringe. We're in the middle of working out venues at the moment, so hopefully I'll be bringing a show to Mount Gambier, and then I'll be at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival from March 26th until April 19th, a little wonderful venue called Trainscendence, which has both a train on the roof and a plane in the basement. So you want to come out and sit in one of those rooms, because those are the rooms that I have booked. Please come and check out the show I'll be doing. It's Thursday to Monday through the entire festival, from March 26th until April 19th. Until then, my friends, until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. So let's get into the headlines. The owner of Paran nightclub, Revolver, has launched a civil claim against the venue's bookkeeper, who was accused in court documents of misappropriating almost $4.5 million from the famed late venue on Chapel Street. What? The bookkeeper of the most notoriously drug-friendly venue in Melbourne was doing something shady? Say it isn't so! What's left to believe in if I can't believe in the bookkeeper of the most dodgy venue in Melbourne? I'm actually amazed that they had $4.5 million to launder, but I guess that's what happens. You end up saving a lot of money when you don't bother fixing the toilets or cleaning the carpet for 28 years. I guess little things do add up. Sizzler is returning to Australia 6 years after shutting down. The Minor Hotel Group will open the all-you-can-eat chain at their new hotel at Sydney Airport in the coming months. Hang on. Wait, you're going to put an all-you-can-eat restaurant at an airport? What's wrong with you? This is why you went out of business in the first place. It's stupid decisions like this. Anywhere else would be a better location than an airport for an all-you-can-eat venue. I don't want to eat all I can eat before getting on the plane. No way, that's never going to happen. If I wanted to spend my entire journey in a toilet, I'd have flown on Jetstar or taken a megabus. And I certainly don't want to eat all I can eat after a flight. I want to be as far from the airport as possible, as fast as possible. I don't have time to stop and eat my body weight in steak at your airport restaurant. I need to brush my teeth and wash the smell of 14 hours of recycled farts off my body. Do you understand? Pick anywhere else. Researchers at the University of Pécs in Hungary have found that it doesn't matter how frequently one watches porn. The reasons why someone indulges in the stuff are far more predictive of their sexual health. The study suggests porn is less dangerous than the feelings that you're running from, concluding that gooning is not a moral failure, just a motivational one. Apparently, you can't out-masturbate emotional repression, and I would know because I've been trying. If you want to know more, you can read more in the Hungarian Journal of... I swear, I'm just reading it for the articles! On its upcoming 30th anniversary, Sky News has announced that it will be dropping the sky from its title after realizing that their branding is way off, as the word sky does symbolize hope. And that's just not what they do. And you will not be finding any hope on their channel anytime soon. It's just a commitment to round-the-clock manufactured panic. The rebrand makes a solid shift from the illusion of journalism to perpetual reactionary garbage machine. Names being floated for the rebrand include News 24, Moral Panic 24, or simply Propaganda 24, just to make it more clear what they do. And for real Sky News hardcores, those who just love and cannot get enough of the moral panic 24 hours a day, they're apparently offering a premium subscription tier with an all caps chyron down the front that just says panic, 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 panic over and over again. Oh, and occasionally it's like, Labour's bad, panic, panic, panic. Sky News has ensured its viewers that despite the name change, viewers will get the same levels of moral panic that they've come to expect over 30 years of importing America's cultural nonsense. The OECD's annual survey of Australia's economy bluntly noted what most Australians understood very clearly. Housing is expensive and in short supply. You can read that survey in the annual edition of NADA magazine. The report highlighted issues with planning that restrict density in urban areas, but importantly, it also noted the need to reform Australia's tax system to stop favouring investors. At this point, it's less a report and more a modest proposal that the structure designed to inflate housing prices might be inflating housing prices. And the OECD suggests government maybe stop paying people to make housing more and more unaffordable. In general, it'd probably be best if Australia stopped subsidising its own housing crisis, they boldly suggested. And remember, homes were traditionally used for living in and not as a means of earning money. In response, Australia has assured the OECD the housing crisis is working as intended, but the government promises to consider reform after just one more property boom, you know? The Northern Territory government has mandated that students at all Northern Territory public schools would be required to sing both verses of the Australian National Anthem in English at assemblies and special events under new Country Liberal Party government policy. Despite Northern Territory students, teachers and parents saying the anthem has never stopped being sung at assemblies. So this is a real bold policy to fix a non-existent problem. Now that's what I call governance. I, for one, would like to congratulate the Northern Territory government for securing its historic victory over nothing. But I just think mandating the singing of both verses? bold choice. Both verses of the anthem. This is the antithesis of Australian culture. The only proud thing that the national anthem has brought to Australian culture is that most Australians don't even pretend to know all of the words. Which is funny considering that as a move in the culture war, because the second verse is actually the far more progressive verse. That's the one that goes, "For those who've come across the seas, we've boundless plains to share. With courage, let us all combine to advance Australia fair." They must have been confused by the presence of the words "advance Australia" and thought it was a policy put forward by the lobbying group. Martin Shkreli is suing RZA over multi-million dollar Wu-Tang album Once Upon a Time in Shaolin, which he bought and forfeited after he was publicly caught being a dickhead with drug prices. That story again. Martin Shkreli sues the Wu-Tang Clan for suffering the consequences of his own actions. Yeah, a man who once priced medicine like it was a rare vinyl was confused when market forces turned on him. We'll call this a brief mediation on the difference between owning art and understanding art. They'll eventually make an album about this, and they'll call it Once Upon a Time in Federal Court. KPMG has asked Sydney Writers Festival to delete its name from their website after author Randa Abdel Fattah was confirmed as speaker. Yeah, because we wouldn't want KPMG's good name dragged through the mud. Can't have them getting all this good PR on them. People might confuse them for a company with integrity. They're perfectly capable of creating their own PR shitstorm, thank you very much. They don't need to be attached to someone else's problem. If anybody will ruin KPMG's reputation, it'll be KPMG. They've earned the right. Pauline Hanson has offered to form a coalition government with the Liberals and the Nationals. Despite beating the Liberal Party in recent polls, the brutal reality has set in that she would need to move from having one seat in the House of Representatives via Barnaby Joyce to 76 seats in order to form government. I believe they were looking at calling it the Axis of Bullshittery? No, we can do better. The Axis of Regression. Ooh, the League of Extraordinary Backwardsmen. The Order of Eternal Culture War. Ooh, no, the Axis of Whinge. A new United States congressional report openly contemplated not selling any nuclear submarines to Australia, as promised under the AUKUS agreement, because America wants to retain control of the submarines for a potential conflict with China over Taiwan. And given how they're behaving right now, the report suggests Australia may not need submarines as much as America does, because they're considering changing them from nuclear-class submarines to the rarely seen Schrodinger-class submarines, which were both sold and not sold to the receiving country. Just don't open the box and check. Queensland will become the first state to expressly ban the use of the phrase "from the river to the sea" under the proposed hate speech laws. Under the proposed laws, anyone displaying or uttering prescribed phrases are liable for a maximum 2-year prison sentence. Now, this really shouldn't be a surprise to any of us that Australia has been rolling out the banning of statements about giving the land back to its original owners. Also, Queenslanders who display hate symbols, recite terrorist slogans, harass or cause damage to a place of worship could face up to 7 years in prison under the planned changes. No word yet on when comments about Muslims made by Pauline Hanson will be treated as hate speech under these new laws. But to be fair, this is 2026, and Y2K nostalgia dominates as we see low-rise jeans, cargo pants, crop tops, and unfiltered hatred of Muslims are all back in fashion. So it's probably not going to happen. On top of rising disappointment in the major parties, these actions have seen rise in the polls for One Nation, leading to mass media panic, read "free airtime and promotion for One Nation," and a bunch of people making the excuse why they turn to One Nation as their non-major party choice instead of the Greens. Those excuses usually take the form of "she says it how it is," and because the Greens block perfectly decent policy for not being perfect instead of helping people. So instead, they apparently have justified voting for a party that actively votes against public holiday rates and increasing political transparency, and increasing funding for public schools, increasing subsidies for childcare, and increasing housing affordability, and attempted to take bribes from the NRA in order to weaken local gun laws. Yeah, apparently the woman who's being bankrolled by a billionaire, who had a government job that pays double the average salary of an Australian for nearly the last 30 years, and says things that would get ordinary people either fired or arrested, claims she knows what it's like for the working man. That story again. Poll numbers are lifting for a party that is run by a woman telling people, if you don't like it, leave. Who's consistently complaining about the country while trying to change it with ideas and values that were imported from overseas. Hey Pauline, if you don't like it, you can leave. A $10 billion data center will be built at Hazelwood in Victoria's East, providing necessary infrastructure for the artificial intelligence boom. Situated in the heart of coal country, the site has a unique appeal for a data center due to its proximity to the electrical network and water resources. Also, this area was already set up for one environmentally damaging industry that will potentially kill us all. So why not put another one there? But instead of coal and heat, it'll just use up all of our water, taking us closer to our inevitable destiny as the backdrop for a Mad Max film. The UK government is considering introducing legislation to remove Andrew Mountbatten Windsor from the line of royal succession. Defence Minister Luke Pollard told the BBC the move, which will prevent Andrew from ever becoming king, was the right thing to do, regardless of the outcome of his recent police investigation. I, for one, am thrilled that the UK government is looking to solve a problem that would have taken several royal funerals to occur in the first place. As the government doesn't have a habit of taking care of problems before they occur, historically. But nobody is considering that there is a real, easy solution to this whole situation. Dissolve the royal family entirely, sell off all the assets, give the money back to the people, and then fuck off into obscurity. I mean, I guess that's less of a joke and more of a hope for the future of humanity, but a girl can dream, my friends. A girl can dream. Despite all of this, Anthony Albanese has said that the latest crisis facing the British royal family will not prompt another referendum on Australia becoming a republic, even if Australia supports removing Andrew from the line of succession. Albanese went on to clarify that the royal chaos is sad, but not like fill out some form sad. That's a step too far. What they are calling an extraordinary fall from grace will be followed by an ordinary commitment to the crown. After all, constitutional reform requires more than global embarrassment. They have to do something extreme, like kill someone who isn't a member of their family but people love. Seems Australia's republic status remains yeah nah and is not likely to shift to nah yeah anytime soon. And that's the end of the headlines, my friends. Now onto the bigger news, starting with Death of Art News. Australia is in a constant state of denial about its own cultural identity, and I don't mean is the country white enough, or should we accept more immigrants, or some garbage about Australian values, whatever that means, but how much we are willing to watch Australian TV and movies, except for Bluey, of course. We have all agreed that Bluey is the shit. But outside of our love for Bluey, we're having a bit of a problem. See, Australia is in danger of becoming an artless country, as enrolments in creative courses are collapsing. We already suffer a large amount of cultural cringe, but we are risking becoming a nation that produces nothing but minerals and LinkedIn posts about synergy and pizza parties real fast. Our cultural landscape is in danger of becoming as empty as the desert in Mad Max. No worse. At least Mad Max had good production design. We start cutting back on culture now, we won't even have a cool gangs in the post-apocalypse, as all of that will require artists to have an idea about how to theme the gang, and all the art will be stripped out of building a new world if we don't support artists now. It'll instead be as devoid as original content from Channel 10. As dead as Steve Irwin. Too dark? Fine. As dead as DVDs. Is that better? Cowards. Certain politicians and members of society see art as a disposable waste of public funds. But you're thinking about it all wrong. We need to treat our culture like infrastructure. And like not like our regional roads. More like the metro tunnel. You know, we keep pumping money into it until it blows its budget. We don't wait until the bridge collapses to admit that we need a new bridge. You know what I mean? Culture is the bridge between who are we and why are we yelling? And we will only get those answers through cultural exploration. Guys, the arts aren't a luxury. They're not scented candles for rich kids. They're not oat milk for the soul. They're a driver of social mobility, a platform for unheard voices. Art will transform not only the artists who take part, but the audiences who take a chance on listening to it. Like you, who've taken a chance to listen to this, The Bullshit Arts. There are sections of our culture built by the working class getting access, getting money, and the opportunity to take a chance. And it's all stuff that you love, but don't think of as arts. That's like the castle, that's degeneration. Basically, anything by Working Dog. You know, they aren't called Working Dog for no reason. This is working class people getting a chance to tell working class stories. You'd think former working class people like Pauline Hanson would be more appreciative of this, especially as she herself recently became a member of the arts community by taking her YouTube show to the cinema. So now, those are two things that we have in common. We're both redheads, and apparently we're both artists. But that's it, guys. That's where the comparisons end. But she constantly stirs up her anti-immigrant, pro-Australian culture-slash-values moron parade, who will spend their time banging on about how they were defending this country. But they never once stand up for the arts. Instead, they always call it woke and lefty. But then they immediately turn around and use the very music made by woke and lefty working class hero Jimmy Barnes to try and punctuate their parades. Or Bryan Adams, and I don't know why they always go to horses as their song, but they are obsessed with playing horses and marching down the street. I've seen them do it in person. It's weird. But you know what? That's art. That's the way art speaks to people. It connects with them, and they feel like they are getting something from that art. But guys, without support for the arts, there is no Cold Chisel. There is no Darryl Braithwaite. Did you know Darryl Braithwaite's dad was a plumber? We idolize these guys because they spoke with our voice, and they told our stories in ways that the other classes simply couldn't understand. I used to help run an arts program for like at-risk youth, and we kept those kids from making a bunch of poor decisions and mistakes with their life. Yeah, sure, they wanted to do an adaptation of Shakespeare, but set in a modern school. And no, we shut that shit down, because we don't need another one of those. We already have 10 Things I Hate About You. Baz Luhrmann already put a gun in Romeo's hand, we're done with that. But we helped them to create their own stories, and do their own thing. And it was a great time. All these people out there claim they want a country that makes an impact. But they won't fight for this part of it that makes the most impact. And it's ridiculous that the arts are always the first thing that we cut when we're looking for funding change. It's the arts, and then for some reason, science. I don't understand the order of those things. We slash art, we slash science, and we wonder why no one can imagine a future for us to design. Inevitably, that just means that we make it inaccessible for the working class so that we are only left with, at best, middle class art, at worst, owning class art. Yuck, gross, don't make me vomit all over the place. Don't make me do it. It'll be landlords and owners making all the art. That's how you get those paintings in hotel lobbies. You know the ones, they don't mean anything. They don't look like anything except nothing. They're not even good abstract art. They're just so the walls aren't blank. And this landlord masterpiece, this will be the best thing that we have access to. This will be the only art that we have access to as the working class. It's called Beige on Beige, A Study in Passive Income. Are you liking it? Because that's all you're going to get. I'm not sure which is worse, outsourcing the art to AI or to the owning class. Neither of them knows what it is to be human, if I'm honest. I have to ask the working class listening to this, what about your life? What about Australia as a working class person will be preserved in 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years? All those moments in time, they come from songs, from books, from films, from paintings. Kaysan. From little things, big things grow. The Mambo art movement, and of course the ultimate success story, as I've already mentioned, the castle. Is the cultural record just going to be real estate ads? Is that what we want? Tell me, how has this country not made a film, a TV show, or God forbid, a Hamilton-style musical about the Eureka Stockade? A real working class story of overcoming oppression that presumably must hit some of those nebulous Australian values that you keep banging on about. We've made fucking 407 Ned Kelly adaptations, but not one Eureka Stockade adaptation. How? How are we not telling our own stories? Do you want numbers? Is that what you need? Hard numbers? Okay. The arts has contributed $67.4 billion to the economy in 2023 and 2024, representing the 2.5% of the total GDP, while mining, which is a larger overall contributor to the GDP, the arts and the entertainment sector creates significantly more jobs per dollar of turnover, so 9 jobs per $1 million compared to capital-intensive industries like mining, which has 0.59 jobs per million, or building and construction, which is 1 job per million. And how much budget do we get? Shit all. Even pre-pandemic, Australian government spending on culture was among the lowest in the OECD at 0.9% of GDP. So we bring in way more than we cost. So that absolutely justifies all art spending, if that's how you want to put it. If you need it, some form of expenditure point of view, because people love their fucking numbers. If financial bottom lines are all that you care about, well, then this makes sense. But there are so many more benefits on top of just the numbers, on just the spending. You know, we always complain that there aren't any good Australian films and all of our actors go overseas. Well, this is why. We bleed the arts dry and complain when the artists go where they can actually earn a living. Say things like, oh, they should do it for the love. Well, how many toilets have you unclogged for the love of it? People want to get paid. For better or worse, the arts raised most of us. We sat in front of the idiot box and we learned about the world. The arts aren't a luxury. They're essential infrastructure for a healthy society. Arts funding would have so many flow-on effects, like reducing crime, taking pressure off Medicare. It teaches us to be more critical thinkers, so we question terrible policy and bad leaders who try to divide us, and divide us under the culture war talking points but don't present any real solutions, who fail to support the people who need the support the most, the working class, the poor, the struggling. This is far from the beginning of it. We have been in an arts crisis for decades, and we need to figure this out, guys. Moving on now, it is Visit News. Pro-Palestinian rallies have become a regular feature across all major cities for just over 2 years now, as the ongoing slaughter in Gaza has become mere background noise to newer, shinier news. Seems we've officially reached the scroll past the genocide phase of late capitalism. The algorithm has decided war crimes don't trend as well as a man punching a kangaroo or some shit. The protests have shown not only our willingness to stand up for injustice and against genocide in this modern world, but if this country as a whole were to have a psychologist and you would ask them, they'd say, They couldn't speak to that party's particular private medical sessions, but certainly one could argue that 2 years of non-stop protests for the voiceless, downtrodden native population of a country slowly being invaded by a colonizing force might seem like a form of proxy protest for the people to say the things that they know they won't be heard about their own country. It's like the country lying on the therapist's couch saying, "Oh, look, I'm not angry about my own colonial history. I'm just very passionate about this completely unrelated one for no reason." Much the same way that MASH, a dramedy sitcom about the war in Korea, was a stand-in for the war in Vietnam. These protests are about Gaza, but everyone knows that there's a mirror involved, just not a lot of self-reflection. And it was with all this consideration in mind that the Australian Federal Police sought independent legal advice about how to handle the President of Israel's visit, for reasons one struggles to understand. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese invited the Prime Minister of Israel, Isaac Herzog, to visit our country, supposedly to support the Jewish community here, despite previously, some might say, grounding his approach, others might say, cowardly hiding behind our history of non-intervention in the Israeli-Palestinian colonialization and genocide, and our contracts to sell weapon components to Israel in order to avoid being decisive on action and support. But we can all agree, nothing says, "Let's lower the temperature," like importing geopolitical instability. Throw some gasoline on that fire. And also, I guess, some nonsense about Australian voters not wanting those tensions to be brought here. So good thing we didn't bring them here. So then Anthony Albanese went and directly invited a man who has personally signed bombs that are destined for Gaza while denying he incited genocide in Gaza, but also said about Gazans in the days after Hamas's deadly attacks, "It is not true, this rhetoric about civilians who are not aware or not involved. It is absolutely not true." A maddening and unhinged statement if ever I've heard one. That's not nuance, my friend. That's collective punishment put through an AI filter saying, "Can you make this sound like positive PR, please?" Admittedly, while Benjamin Netanyahu is the subject of an arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court, Herzog currently is not. So Australia had no international obligation to arrest the man that it had gone out of its way to invite for an official visit. And as such, the AFP confirmed that it won't arrest Israel President Isaac Herzog. Seems we are very firm when it comes to shoplifters, but heads of state, let's not overreact here. Calm it down a little. We in fact took no action to make people feel heard or supported when inviting a war criminal over for a lovely brunch and a public speech on the public dollar. Though I am being unfair, they didn't do nothing at all. No, certainly not. In fact, New South Wales Premier Chris Minns went ahead and invoked special powers for New South Wales Police and then urged calm. So that'll certainly help the situation. Nothing calms people down like telling them to relax because they're being overly dramatic. So how did it all go?
Police used a number of questionable tactics to disperse the thousands of people, including pepper spray and charging protesters up the street.
Ooh, questionable tactics. Now that's journalism speak for this is going to look bad in hindsight. So really, what happened? What happened here? Albo, you said this visit was intended to foster a greater sense of unity. Oh, actually, wait. I think I figured it out. There were protests held by thousands of people across Australian capitals and regional centres all over the country. And honestly, we haven't been this united since, I guess, 2025, since the election, when there was a chance that Peter Dutton was going to become the PM and we all bound together to make sure that didn't happen. You know what? I take it all back. Sorry, Albo. You were playing 4D chess all along. The people are angry at Albo, and he needed a villain next to him to look better by comparison. And there aren't many bigger villains right now than the Israeli government. Okay. You united the people in anger. I get it. Did that help? Well, most states managed to make their protests non-violent, but Sydney, Sydney's a special kind of city. Sydney had to prove once again to the world that it was a global city by imitating the violence against protesters that had been seen in online anti-vice videos in America, when violent scenes between police and protesters erupted in Sydney. After cops refused to not be dicks after being given extra powers to deal with the protesters.
Officers used capsicum spray, punching and chasing demonstrators when the crowd wouldn't move on.
What? Have they learned nothing from Spider-Man? With great power comes great responsibility. This is how you kill Uncle Ben. Do you want to kill Uncle Ben? Because you're heading down the path to killing Uncle Ben. Police, what do you have to say on this matter? Anything of substance?
I believe the crowd really took part in some type of contagion of groupthink, where we saw ordinary people who really took part in something that I don't think they would normally do. And that is openly and willingly break the law.
Champ, is this your first day as a cop? You never heard of a supermarket? We are stealing like motherfuckers because they are price gouging. Your whole job exists, well, that's a bad example. Your whole job exists to use the working class to protect the interests of the rich and powerful, but in theory, your whole job exists because crime exists. Albo, you got any thoughts on this matter?
As I have said repeatedly, we need to turn the temperature down.
Champ, asking us to turn down the temperature when you are actively inviting over the sun to have a barbecue is what we might call a mixed message. You can't ask people to turn down the heat while you're fanning the flames with a diplomatic fan made out of a flamethrower. That'd be like being a party that has a go at the major opposition for not taking climate change seriously and then goes and approves the expansion of old and then building new coal mines. Oh, wait. Oh, shit. But what would we know about that? Any other words of wisdom, Albo?
And that the debate is not advanced by people thinking it's like a football team where you have to support 100% one side or the other.
Well, of course he would say that. He's a Hawthorn supporter. They haven't won a premiership since 2015. Did I have to look that up? You betcha. Because I know nothing about sports. But this is a ballsy claim, my friend. And if you'll forgive the pun there. How many weapons parts have we provided to the Palestinian soldiers in the 75-year ongoing genocide? You know, where is the invite for a state visit for the Palestinian president, Mohammed Abbas? Seems like you've picked a side here, haven't you, Albo? And you don't like it when people have chosen the other side.
And I know all Australians would have found those scenes very confronting. I note that the New South Wales Police have said they will examine the footage which was taken place last night.
Oh, good! The police will take a look at this whole issue with the police. Cool. No worries. No issues there. We'll just let the police investigate themselves. I'm sure there'll be no problems with that at all. After all, they are famously restrained in the face of increased power, just like their friends, the Israeli government. A United Nations Independent International Commission of Inquiry, which does not speak on behalf of the UN as a whole, concluded in September that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. The commission also said Herzog, Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and former Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant had incited the commission of genocide in their speeches and statements. Israel is separately defending a genocide case at the International Court of Justice, which has just ordered provisional measures, but has yet to issue a final ruling. That case, by the way, was brought to the International Court of Justice by, of all places, South Africa. Yeah, the same South Africa from apartheid fame. You know that you're fucking it up when even South Africa is like, hey man, you're making the white people look bad. The apartheid's former headline act is saying, guys, this is starting to look kind of familiar. Maybe you should calm down. Although, of course, saying calm down to people has never historically helped them calm down. So, I guess we're just going in circles at this point. So, why did we arrest this guy? Sure, we didn't have an international requirement, but we're supposed to be one of the international good guys, aren't we? Or at least, that's the story we tell ourselves. We fight dictators and genocidal maniacs, and we're very proud of that. So what happened? Truth be told, the government of Australia, like the government of Israel, is behind the times. It is out of step with the Australian people, which is weird because those who commit genocide usually want their soldiers in lockstep of some kind. For years, we have been supporting Israel because not only was it the done thing internationally, but we feel we really didn't have a choice. If we were to turn suddenly and support the Palestinian people, we would have to reckon with our own history of genocide, and the government is not really ready for that. Supporting Palestine means looking at our own colonization without the comforting distance of geography. If we admit that genocide is happening now, people might ask uncomfortable questions about the past that we just aren't ready for. I mean, look at us. It took 2 days for us to decide that a man throwing a homemade bomb in an Invasion Day rally was in fact an act of terrorism. That's slower than Australia Post. Which is why New South Wales police absolutely had to crack down on protesters and attack the Muslims who were quietly praying in a secluded area away from the rest of the rally. And Chris Minns had to rush in and make his position clear in this whole situation by defending the actions of police, refusing to apologise to the Muslim community and saying he doesn't support an independent inquiry, defending the actions of the police in what he described was the middle of a riot. And weren't they just? Look at them. Clearly in the middle of a riot. Rioting. Crazy. If that's a riot, then I think I need to update my family Christmas to an insurrection. You can see clearly they were gathered in a group of more than three. That is riotous behaviour. Let's get the definition up. Let's pop the definition up so people can see. There it is. Okay. All right, so here we go. There must have been, there must have been in a disorderly profusion. No, they're looking pretty orderly there. Okay, how else can we justify this? Well, they didn't look like they were being very amusing. Okay, so they didn't look like they were indulging in wantonness. That's at a Chinese restaurant. But come on, guys. I mean, you don't know. You don't know what they were praying for. Oh, it might have been for unrestrained revelry or wantonness. They might have been praying for either of those things. So obviously, they had to be stopped. Minns went on to lick more boot by saying officers did everything possible to avoid violent confrontations. They used all the classic avoiding violent confrontation techniques, like attacking the elderly, attacking people praying, herding protesters into areas that they can't escape from, and telling them to disperse when they can't move, because you've herded them into a cramped quarters, and they can't leave no matter how much you tell them that they need to move on. And I would know, because my therapist says that I am constantly avoiding confrontation and herding myself into a psychological position that I can't move out of. Hypothetically, of course. Hypothetically. My therapist calls it maladaptive coping. The government simply calls it event management. And finally, guys, it is coalition news. So while I was away, the coalition underwent its new favourite pastime, threatening to break up. Like an abusive partner, they figured out that they can use the relationship as leverage to demand that you do what they want. And guys, nobody who treats you this way is worth it, okay? You're better than that. You might think that you need to be in power to take advantage of being a politician, but you don't. I promise you, you don't. I think you'll find it's just easier to be in opposition forever. You can say whatever you like, the people who believe you will vote for you regardless, and you'll never be wrong. You can forever just say that if only you'd put us in power, then things would be different, and you'd get paid very handsomely to do that. And occasionally, a billionaire will see you as a lever to power and send money your way. If anything, it's a pretty sweet gig. But as they always are, these things are short-lived, and the Liberal Party and National Parties reunited to form the coalition once more. After 11th-hour talks between leaders Susan Ley and David Littleproud. Just a minor concession here and a compromise there, and it's back to being in opposition. Reunited, and it feels so good. Ley then said that the coalition had a responsibility to chart a course back to government. She then went on to say that after recent crackdowns on freedom of speech and protests in Australia, becoming the most secretive government in Australian history and failing to build a functional and effective anti-corruption commission, Labor were doing a better job at being the coalition than the coalition have been for years. And if Labor becomes the coalition, then I guess the coalition has to become the Greens or One Nation, and neither of those sound particularly appealing to the coalition. Ley said that the coalition is back together and looking to the future and not to the past. Great! Have we got footage of them looking to the future?
We have breaking news at 9 a.m. It is official. Susan Ley is being challenged as leader of the Liberal Party.
Oh shit! It's another lip spill! Yeah! Not even a year after the last leadership challenge that put Susan Ley in power in the first place, the coalition has broken up twice!
A fresh news poll declared her the most unpopular leader in a quarter century.
Well, I guess Susan Ley was just out to prove women are just as capable of fucking up the coalition as any man was. She's running up that hill, she's going through the glass door and proceeding to break the glass ceiling of ineptitude, girl power, zigazay ah.
Over the last 9 months, according to the most recent opinion polls, 2.1 million of those people have since deserted the coalition.
Oh, James. Whew. You do know how to turn an electorate on, don't you? Don't stop. Don't stop now. It's just getting good.
If it goes on, there'll be nothing left of the Liberal Party by the next election.
Ooh, James. James. Ooh, don't threaten me with a good time. You're almost there. You're almost there. Keep going. Keep going. Why are you stopping? James, why are you stopping now? Wait, James, don't stop. Don't stop. James, stop edging us and bring us to completion. James. James. Yeah, of course not. Typical coalition behaviour. They never know how to satisfy the voters. It's not just the Liberals taking pot shots at the Liberals. Anthony Albanese jumped on Easy Political Points, accusing the coalition of being obsessed with cutting each other down, saying they love fighting, but they never fight for Australia, which honestly is rich coming from the Labor Party right now. If I had just oppressed as many right to assembly and protests as you have recently. Belaboring the point more as he says, they just fight each other because it goes to the core values. Champ, what are you doing? Here's a hot tip for you. When your enemy is making a mistake, don't interfere. Let them make the mistake. No wonder you've been struggling to win elections. What is the strategy here? As one modern philosopher put it,
let them fight.
Susan has only been in the position 9 months. Surely she won't be given the Liz Truss treatment.
Some breaking news. Angus, 34. Susan Ley, 17.
Oh, well, never mind. The coalition has a new leader now. There's a new opposition leader to make fun of. And now they don't ever have to admit that they were a shit party with no policies, who makes mistakes and makes waves by claiming to be a party of economic responsibility, but then every time they get in power, our debt and our rights get worse. So no, it's not the party's fault. It's the children who are wrong. I mean, the leader who was wrong. If they fuck up the 2028 election, they can simply scapegoat the previous party leader as unqualified, even though Angus lost the leadership challenge to her in the first place, and it's him that's leading them into the new election. Susan, have you got any thoughts about this?
I will be tendering my resignation to the Speaker.
Oh, well, that escalated fast. And between us, is probably the most sensible thing that anyone from the party has done in a long time. Anyone else want to give any thoughts?
I look forward to stepping away completely and comprehensively from public life.
Oh, you know what? This might be the smartest thing that a politician has ever said when leaving office. Get out fast and easy. Don't say anything else that will haunt you. Make a graceful exit. And it looks like she got out clean.
I was part of the early punk rock movement in Canberra. I will continue to find wisdom in one of punk's defining themes, a fearless and honest belief in yourself.
Susan! What are you doing? You were out! You had it! You nailed the exit! And then you tripped over on the way off the mat. You stood in front of the nation in an egg white power suit and declared yourself the enduring spirit of punk? You're invoking an anti-authoritarian movement immediately after being leader of the authority. What are you doing? The woman who had a cry when Anthony Albanese wore a Joy Division shirt so she could attempt to score political points. Real fucking punk rock of you there. I'm not going to call you a poser, as I'm not going to gatekeep punk from you. If you want to consider yourself a punk, fine. That's against the movement, gatekeep punk. The only people not allowed in are Nazis. That's been made historically clear. I guess she intends to go and fight the system that she ran. Seems that fearless was not the quality they wanted in a leader. The party confirmed it prefers electable as its adjective. Although that fails to explain why they chose Angus as their new leader. But don't let that stop you from laying the future problems of the party at the feet of Susan going forward, Angus. Certainly, she called herself a punk, so it just got easier. They wanted a company man, who has been more and more company as the years went on. Enter company boy Angus Taylor. So why was he no good before, but suddenly he is good enough now? Who is this man? Who is Angus Taylor? Well, he was a Rhodes Scholar with qualifications in economics and a career in business before politics. His 1993 Oxford thesis used game theory to argue that small English pubs should be protected from the major brewers by limiting the number of hotels that they could tie up to supply their beer. Perhaps surprisingly for a liberal, Taylor was arguing for more regulation, not less. But don't let Angus read past Angus's thesis. People might think that he's some sort of pinko commie and cares about fairness. He might even lose this leadership position that he's managed to take. And don't let that thesis confuse you. Angus does have the qualities that are needed to be a leader of the Liberal Party. He has pushed against nation-building projects like the NBN and wind farms. His investments proved controversial over alleged illegal clearing of native grasslands in 2016 by a company called Jamland, in which Taylor has a shareholding, and shortly after Jamland was investigated for allegedly poisoning the critically endangered habitat. They were illegally clearing protected grasslands by a company in which his family had a financial interest. Now, he denied any wrongdoing to the use of a mysterious and misleading document which he could never explain. To attack Sydney Lord Mayor Clover Moore of excess travel costs and then doctored documents to fit this narrative, and was found out. The council had actually spent less than $230,000 on travel that financial year, which was not what Angus had claimed. His mate was involved in poisoning 406 wedge-tail eagles, and he never faced court due to statute of limitations being passed. And that same person was involved with illegal land clearing with the Taylor family business. He backed Dutton in the 2018 spill that removed Turnbull and then delivered the leadership to Scott Morrison joining Morrison's cabinet as Minister for Energy and Industry. Despite not supporting Morrison, though one could hardly hold not supporting Scott Morrison against anybody. In 2019, it emerged that the then Agriculture Minister, Barnaby Joyce, bought water rights worth nearly $80 million from Eastern Australia Agriculture, a cotton company that Angus helped set up in 2007. In an event annoyingly known as Watergate. And of course, his most famous move, a great one, one might say. Taylor was the subject of unwelcome media attention when his official Facebook page commented on its own post about funding for rail car parks in the now famous and endlessly recycled words, "Fantastic, great move, well done, Angus." Look at him go. Great move. Well done, Angus. A move so mindless and stupid that he will probably try to take the narrative by making it his campaign slogan. So, like all our strongest Liberal Party leaders, Angus enters the leadership position with a whole collection of controversies under his belt already. So he is well prepared to lie to the media and deceive his electorate like a true coalition leader. So surely, the best controversies will still be ahead of him. As Taylor faces a bunch of pre-existing problems he, admittedly, has inherited from previous coalition governments, some of which he helped to create. Both parties and problems, that is. It's now a question of whether he's capable or even has the inclination to fix these very same problems, which commenced during the time the Liberal Party was in government between 2013 and 2022. And it's new problems as it bleeds popularity faster than a haemophiliac in a cactus factory. Remember, the Liberal Party was in government less than 3 years ago and has been for 9 years. The Liberal Party can't rebuild its base simply by opposing. That was the 2022 strategy for Labor and the Democrats, and we've seen how poorly that it worked for Democrats when Trump rolled into town again and took power. He might have had to do something radical, something that the Liberal Party hasn't done for a good while. He might need to announce some policies. Any policies will do, like just something. It'd be a good start. So Angus, are you listening? Are you listening? I know it's scary if you announce something and then don't do it. They might say that you flip-flopped, and there seems to be nothing worse to a politician than the accusation of flip-flopping. But alternatively, you could just shoot off a bunch of buzzwords. I wonder which one he will choose. Do we have a clip?
We must look ahead and put the disagreements of the recent past behind us. And most importantly, hold a bad Labor government to account by putting Australians first.
Ding, 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 it's buzzword time! That's right, let's rack up some buzzwords before we move on. Let's do it, Angus. What do you got for me? Show me some buzzwords.
Our core values. Politics of convenience in everyday Australians. Put the Australian people first. Record immigration. Our borders have been open to people who hate our way of life by Islamist extremists and has failed to protect our way of life and protect our way of life. Where we're a nation of strength and unity, unapologetically defend Australian values. We know that government must live within its means. We'll focus on the things that unite us, family, community and nation.
Anything else, Angus? Anything else? What about a fair go? Do we get a fair go? Does anybody get a fair go? We're famous for that one.
And where there's a fair go.
We get a fair go? Oh, there it is. I was worried there for a minute, Angus. I was worried that you didn't want to give us a fair go. I didn't think that we'd be getting a fair go. And if you were opposition leader, I don't know, 10 years ago, we'd probably still be on Team Australia, I guess. Remember, most of these challenges did come from policies put in place by the coalition that have made climate change worse by removing the carbon tax and actively pushing against renewable energies in favour of nuclear, who pushed debt up from gross debt significantly, increasing it from $271 billion to over $881 billion, who masterminded the Robodebt scandal, who engaged in rampant pork barreling, and members literally being found guilty of corruption, wasting not only tax money that you pay, but then forcing us to spend money, more money, to uncover their corruption and their pork barreling. Despite this, throughout his press conference, Angus Taylor has repeatedly said that he wants to protect Australians' way of life, saying he doesn't want, quote, bad migration.
Good migration is good for this country. I've always believed that. I grew up in a town not far south of here, which was a migrant town, and I saw what it brought to the country. We had the first great cappuccinos in this country.
Oh, good migration. What does that look like? Making a cappuccino? Apparently that's good migration. Apparently that's that looks like a bunch of people just saying, just shut up and make our coffees, please. Serve us food and leave your ideas at the door. You know, give us better food. Give us a better food scene than the UK, but don't get any ideas about being accepted. You know, shut up and dance. You know, that sort of thing. Get back in the kitchen. That sort of thing. But only if you speak English and respect the local culture, like Australia has always done. Respected the local culture, I mean. You know, we did that in Australia. 125 years of respecting local culture. But Angus, I must ask, what about this?
I've been leaked one of the proposals the Liberal Party is actively discussing, inspired by a recent UK Labour Party policy. If a country doesn't take back its citizens who've been rejected by Australia, then Australia would blacklist that country, or potentially a zone within it, and ban its citizens getting a visa here. This could include areas like parts of the Philippines, which have, in the past, been hotbeds for terrorism. Some moderates in the party believe it goes too far, but we understand the new leader is considering it.
Seems the only form of foreign hate that we are happy to accept is when white people hate people. White people can hate whoever they like, it would appear, especially if they run a newspaper or a political party. As Angus and Pauline find themselves in a political pissing competition over who hates Muslims the most. But don't let me stand in your way. Two of you can fight it out. Have at it. And Taylor has been asked about that famous comment on Facebook. He says that ridicule is the biggest enemy of politicians. Well, allow me to slip into enemy mode real fast. So first, what a fucking stupid statement. Ridicule is the biggest friend of politicians. They otherwise don't seem to know when they have fucked up and need to be mocked relentlessly. Have a sense of humour about yourself, Angus. I mean, you want to run Australia, and you can't take a joke? Get the fuck out of here. We're all about larrikinism. Isn't that an Australian value? Making fun of ourselves? Detrimental humour? Angus Taylor has certainly proved that he is leadership material, mostly by finally remembering to sign out of his fake accounts before jumping on social media to like and comment, good job, on his own posts about challenging Susan Ley for opposition leadership. Now, first of all, what a beautiful, fragile statement that was. Ridicule is not the enemy of politicians, okay? Ridicule is the only thing that occasionally reminds them that they're mortal. If ridicule doesn't exist, then Question Time would just be an even more useless PowerPoint presentation. A TED talk, but more boring. Ridicule is the pressure release valve of democracy. Without it, we'd have to start throwing furniture at each other. You want to run Australia? And you can't survive a meme? Mate, this is the country that turned a prime minister eating a raw onion into folklore. And then he says that we need to focus on Australian values. Okay. Australian values, sure. The political equivalent of vibes, I guess. It's one of those phrases that means everything and nothing all at the same time. The Australian values are like the Constitution in America. Everyone invokes it, but no one's actually read it. It's flexible, it stretches, it expands to include whatever we're currently comfortable with, and then shrinks to exclude whatever makes us uneasy at the time. Do you love a barbecue? That's an Australian value. Do you like public health care? Well, that's debatable whether it's Australian valuable. It depends on who's collecting it. Standing up for human rights? Yeah, again, it depends on who's asking. Un-Australian is just code for, well, I don't like that one thing. We say that we value mateship, but only if your mate votes correctly. We say that we value fairness, unless fairness is expensive. We say that we value a fair go, but not a fair go that involves refugees, renters, or anyone slightly inconvenient. Australian values are apparently sacred, but somehow they always align perfectly with whoever's polling well in marginal seats. And let's be honest, if ridicule is the biggest enemy of politicians, that's because it exposes the one thing that they fear the most: being seen clearly. Ridicule stops the spin. It's not an enemy, it's quality control. Democracy without ridicule is simply marketing. And if your leadership collapses under the weight of a joke, maybe it wasn't leadership. Maybe it was just branding with a lapel pin. That's the end of the episode, my friends. Thanks for hanging around. I hope you enjoyed it. It's been a bit of a slow rollout this year, but it's okay. We'll get back into it. And if you enjoyed this, do share it with anyone you think would enjoy it, and encourage them to come along, check it out. Do come out to any of my live shows if you feel inclined to do so. As always, I'll be all around, but I am going to be in Adelaide and Melbourne definitely. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be going to Mount Gambier. Hopefully we'll sort that out in the next few days. But as always, thanks for coming out. Thanks for supporting the podcast, and I'll see you next time. Bye. Thank you.